This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to the First Cut Podcast. My name is Kyle Porter, and we spent some time last week at the PGA Merchandise Show in Orlando. Got to interview just a variety of people that we don't often talk to, and you're going to hear from a few of those today. I talked to Paige Sporanic, who is kind of everywhere. She's got her own podcast, which we talk about, and she's doing a bunch of interesting things these days. And then Mark Immelman got a chance to talk to Greg Norman about what's going on with him. So that's fun. And then lastly, maybe my favorite interview of the week, or favorite conversation of the week, Danny Cannell, Raja Bell, and I kind of chopped it up for 20 or 30 minutes just about the world of golf, the way that they kind of see it as, you know, covering sports more broadly than I do. And so it was really interesting just to get two former professional athletes' takes on, what they most envy in terms of golfers' professional lives, and then just kind of what their thoughts are on the season, about Tiger, and then the upcoming Masters. So had a lot of fun with these. Hope you guys enjoy them, and we'll talk again soon. I'm here with Paige Sporanic. Paige, how's your week going so far?
It's been busy, really busy, but so much fun. It's just crazy that, like, everyone in golf is pretty much here at the same time. So you can't even really get to, like, one place to the other without, like, meeting and talking to, like, 20 million people.
Yeah, it is true. It's funny. Every time I come here, the building is massive, and it doesn't seem like you could fill it up with golf-related stuff, and yet there's a ton of brands here, a ton of companies here, and there's a lot of energy here. I'm curious about, just as you're here, what are you seeing, what are you experiencing that gets you excited about the future, about golf, about where all this is headed?
I think just all the new product that's out there, yeah. And obviously the equipment, it keeps getting better and better, which is great for everyday golfers because we want to shoot lower. but like you said, it's just like the energy. Everyone seems really excited about the future and the progression of golf. And it's just fun to be here and to talk to everyone and see what they're doing, what you're doing. And it just gets me so excited. And it's a great way to like start the, you know, beginning of the year.
Yeah, for sure. It is a great way. Who have you talked to so far this week maybe stood out or products that you've seen that you've been excited about?
Yeah, so I'm here with Medterra, which is a CBD company.
Okay.
And it's honestly, like, completely changed my life, and it's really helped my golf game. And so it's really fun to, like, be here and see something that you wouldn't think could be golf-related, and for them to have, like, a booth, and they're doing, like, a really fun thing later today with roundtable discussion. So it's really fun to, like, be there and support them, and I love what they're doing.
How is the golf game right now?
Honestly, it's better than it's ever been. Once I stopped playing professionally,
I think,
yeah, like all the nerves and like the pressure and everything just left. And now I'm like, I just go out there and play and have a great time.
That's great.
And so game's good.
So my problem is I need to start playing professionally and then quit, and then I'll be good to go.
Yeah, I don't recommend that though. Didn't really work out for me so well. So
how often are you playing?
Well, probably almost every day, especially like in the summer, because I have like events and I always want to keep my game kind of sharp.
Yeah.
But I never go out and just like practice or grind and just hit golf balls anymore. So it's all going out and just like playing in skins matches and just having a good time.
It's the best of both worlds. You get to play all the time, but you don't have to do the, you know, hit 1,000 balls and then, you know.
Like if it's like inside 10 feet, I'm like, that's good. We'll go to the next hole. So I haven't made a bogey since I quit golf.
If I can lay down between the ball and the hole, we're good to go.
Yeah.
Tell me about the CBD thing. I feel like that is a thing that
you know, we talk about it with in professional golf, talk about it on the PGA Tour. It's kind of, it kind of came out of nowhere, it felt like. What has your experience been like with that?
So I was completely against anything CBD. Yeah. I didn't think that it worked. I wasn't educated on the product, and I've always had a lot of anxiety, especially social anxiety.
Yeah.
And I was having, and I've tried literally everything. I've seen people, nothing has honestly really helped, and I've had it my whole life. And so we have just all this product from all these different CBD companies at home. And so I was having a massive panic attack, and my husband was like, here, just try this. Like, it's going to help. Like, it can't get any worse. I was like, fine. So I tried Medterra, and it helped so much.
That's
like,
awesome.
I wake up, I use it. I use it before I go to bed. My dog actually has, like, social anxiety, too. No one believes me, but it's true. The vet said so. I'm not making this up. I'm not crazy. But we'll drop a little bit in his food in the morning.
Yeah.
We've seen a really huge difference with him. So, and I think it's really helped my golf game, too, because, like, as we know, golf is so mental, and that was a huge part on why I decided to quit, because I just couldn't handle the pressure and all the outside opinions, and it really got to me.
Yeah.
And so now, like, I go out, and I'm like, I don't even feel, like, nervous anymore, and I wish I had it when I was playing competitively, because I think it would have made a massive difference.
How do you balance that? And this is something that I know you've dealt with, and a lot of people in the media deal with, is you balance, the goal is for people to know you, right?
Yeah.
or to be seen, to be heard, all these different things. And then you balance that with, the pressure or the anxiety that comes with that. What have you learned that's helped you balance that better?
It's taken a lot of years, a lot of tears, a lot of questioning, myself and what I'm doing and if it's right, is it wrong? And I realized that no matter what I do, no matter what I post, no matter what I wear, people are always going to dislike my content.
Right.
And I now separate who I am online. They don't know me.
Yeah.
And so it's like when they see Paige Renee, that's just a picture that I threw up. I'm not like that. I'm at home with no makeup playing with my dog in a sweatshirt and sweatpants.
Right.
But online, I'm this totally different person. And so I have to realize that that's completely separate. It's a persona. It's not actually who I am.
Yeah.
And so that's really helped too. So like when people hate on me, they're not hating on me. They're hating on this person that they think I am.
Right.
And so to like have that separation and have kind of a life outside of social media. So I try not to be on my phone 24/7. I try not to always obsess about it. And if someone says something, it's actually good. You want people talking about your content. You want people to be interested in its entertainment.
Yeah.
And so once you kind of separate that, it makes it so much easier.
I think that's something you hear from even professional golfers. Rory was talking about this a couple of years ago, and I've heard other guys talk about it, how, look, I'm not my scorecard, right? I'm not my image that's on one of these posters over here. I am a human being.
Yeah.
I'm a person.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, it sort of sounds like some of the same stuff there.
Yeah, and it was harder with golf to separate it because – with golf, as we know, it's so tied to your ego.
Yeah.
And if you shoot a bad score, it affects you so much. And so when people would hate on my golfing ability, I could not handle that because I couldn't separate Paige, you know, just being Paige and then Paige on the golf course and then Paige as social media Paige. And so there were so many different things going on. So once I kind of stepped away from playing professionally, it was so much easier. But I don't know how those guys balance everything that they're doing and still play golf and, like, have all those outside opinions because, like we were talking about, golf is so mental and it really gets you. And people don't realize that, like, you have bad days and you don't have millions of people being like, oh, coming to your job and be like, you suck. Why did you type that? Or why did you mess that up? You know?
I was just talking about that with Mark Immelman was over here and we were doing a podcast and I said, what if you had to be in the top 150 in the world in making spreadsheets? And if you didn't finish, if you weren't one of the best 150, you lose your,
ripped apart.
You lose,
like,
your job.
Yeah, or like ripped apart. And it's like social media. And like you said, you lose your job. You're not making any money.
And it's like, well, I was 170th in making spreadsheets this year. I'm out.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
Nobody would want that.
No.
And yet the way that, and it's hard because there has to be some latitude to be able to be critical of Rory McIlroy, of Jon Rahm, because that's our job, right?
Yeah.
As people who are in the media, to where people want to hear, like, why is he not playing well, or why is he playing well, or whatever. But you have to keep that perspective of just how good they are, one, and also that they're human beings. And I think that's been something that I've learned over the years. It's difficult to do, And to do it well, I think is a skill.
Well, and I'm lucky too because I never really have to talk about other players. I try not to because I know how it feels when people have talked about me in a negative way.
Right.
But for people who are actually doing that, like, I don't know how you balance having an opinion on someone else and then also realizing, like, oh, okay, they are, like, a human being. Like, that's so difficult to do, and it's such a tough balance of, like, trying to be funny and witty and have a different take than someone else because we're all, literally, something happens and we're, like, on Twitter trying to get it out as fast as possible to be the first one to say it.
Right.
And sometimes you don't think about, like, okay, how does this affect someone else?
Totally.
Or, like, is it funny? Is it cool? Is it, like, this, all this stuff? It's so hard.
Yeah, and then you get guys or women that are playing that you get to know.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, you actually, like, read this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And so you're like, I was done. And so I think that was the crystallizing moment for me. It was like, oh, okay. So you're going to go over the line at times. I think part of it is rooting it in data and statistics.
Yeah.
Because if I'm saying, like, look, Phil Mickelson's terrible off the tee. Look at his strokes gain. There's not a lot of argument you can say.
I mean, but he's hitting bombs.
That's true. That is true. Speaking of media, so – you're starting a new podcast.
Yes.
When does that start? When are you?
So we're
gonna
start
forward?
Filming in February. So I'm super excited about it. I've never done a podcast before, so I'm a little bit nervous on what to say. Like, well, how we were talking about that, like, how to be opinionated but not cross the line, because I've never done that. And everything, all the controversy that's come from me, just been from pictures. And I'm like, oh no, what's going to happen now if I actually, like, open my mouth and people know what I'm thinking? And but it's really exciting because I have a lot of things that have happened to me in the golf industry that I've never really talked about.
Yeah.
And so it's nice that it's on my terms and I can control the narrative. And so I think it's going to be really liberating for me to finally come out and say all these things that have happened and give more backstory to what people might think of, like, happened, but I can tell them why I acted this way in this moment or why I cried at that press conference because of all this other stuff that was happening to me behind the scenes.
Right.
So I'm excited to, like, talk about that now and finally just tell everyone why I was as emotional as I was or what has happened or kind of my whole golf career. And so it's really exciting and I can't wait to start it.
What are some sources that you've drawn from in terms of looking at how maybe somebody else does not even a podcast. I would say even outside of golf, the way that somebody handles themselves within the media, that you're like, oh, I'd like to do it kind of that way, or that was a good idea. Do you have anything that you've kind of drawn from that you want to maybe, I don't know, recreate, but emulate as you're doing the podcast?
For sure. Like, I always will watch people and see what they're doing and what works for them, but it's so hard because you have to stay authentic to who you are. And so I don't, if I start being uber professional, people who followed me forever, they know that that's not who I am.
Right.
And, or if I'm, like, crazy opinionated, they also know that that's not who I am. And so it's, like, this really hard balance of, like, being who you want to be, but also learning from the best. And I think it's nice because there's so many successful golf podcasts out there. And I'm going to talk golf, but it's going to be very different from what everyone else has done because I've had a very different path and, you know, there's all that information already out there. So I don't have to worry about that. So you can come at golf at a different angle, in a different light, and have it be a little more fun.
Are you going to have guests on there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you want to be a guest?
Let's do it.
Okay, let's do it.
That's great. And the name of it, Playing with Paige?
Yeah, Playing Around.
Playing Around with Paige. Okay, gotcha. Well, that'll be exciting. And so you say film it. Is it distributed audio and video? How's that going to work?
Yeah, so it's through iHeartRadio.
Okay.
And so it'll be both because a lot of people are like, okay, we want to see you. So some people who don't really care what I have to say, at least they can look at me.
Well, that's great. Hey, thanks for your time today. I know this is a busy week for you. Really appreciate it. Great chatting with you and best of luck with the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. I can't wait for you to be on it.
For sure.
Very special guest. You know this guy, multiple major champion, Golf World Hall of Famer, the great white shark, Greg Norman. Welcome. How are you, man?
Thanks, Mark. Very well. Very well indeed.
You're a busy guy. What brings you to the show this week?
Well, I've always come to the show.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is my 38th time of being here. Might be 37, but I just love to see where golf is headed because I've been a global person in a lot of ways. Playing is also in the business world now. Golf has always been that footprint for me, and to see what technology is happening, whether it's hard goods, soft goods, and get the buzz, right? Yeah. You got to get the feel and hearing what people are talking about with the game of golf. And, you know, I think we're on a global front. I think we're in a very, very good place. America is just starting to come around a little bit more now. So, yeah, look, I mean, you only have to look around here now. The energy is good.
It's awesome. Speaking of global, just recently, Australian, South African, the President's Cup at Royal Melbourne was, it was glorious for me to watch. You're a former player, captain. Your take?
Well, I thought Ernie did a phenomenal job, number one. I think the end of the day, he got his team there closer than any other international team for a long, long period of time. So there, it also would bode well going into the next President's Cup, saying that you guys can do it. You guys can do it. I mean, the international team's been beaten like a drum all but for one time, right? But now they're starting to get a sense of team cohesiveness, really good captaincy, putting all that together, you actually can do it. Now, obviously, the Americans came back hard and fast on the singles day, but the whole concept of getting great teamwork in the President's Cup are the four balls and the foursome. Get those under your belt, and then the individuals, they'll make that work because the players are good enough.
Did you think, because the conversation, certainly me as a pundit, said that Royal Melbourne was going to fit the international team. Do you feel like there was some home cooking, some sort of advantage with that?
The interesting thing about the Royal Melbourne is a lot of local knowledge is needed, right? It's one of the most magnificent golf courses in the world. It's not a demanding golf course off the tee, but it's a very demanding second shot in a putter's golf course. Now, you wouldn't think that all 24 players are all great iron players and great putters, but if you don't put that tee shot in the right position on the fairway, you're going to put yourself in a bad angle to get anywhere close to the hole. So, you know, I think it's a great venue. But the other interesting thing that's really not discussed that much is the Australians love sport.
Yeah.
So no matter who goes down there, whether it's international or the U.S. team, they love to see Tiger play. They love to see Justin Thomas play. They love to see everybody play, right? So it's very hard to get the USA, USA, like international, international. It's very hard to get the home field advantage in Australia because Australians are sports lovers, so they're going to support everybody.
One of those Australians just won recently over at the Sony Open, Cam Smith.
Yep.
I've been looking upon this guy to say he seems to have the entire package. I mean, fellow Australian, your take on Cam?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, he's got the demeanor for it, right? He's not an overpoweringly powerful player, right? He's not going to overpower a golf course like the other top five guys in the world. But he knows his game. And he's very methodical. He's very consistent. He applies himself better than most, right? And he, you know, like I said, his demeanor is just perfect for the game of golf. So when I see kids like that come up and win the way they win like that, you know that their runway going forward is going to be a really good one for them.
Speaking of runway, Torrey Pines this week, Farmers Insurance Open 2020, Tiger Woods 2.0, I guess.
Yeah.
You've been at the top of the game. Tiger looks like he's on his way there. I'd love your thoughts on where you see Torrey Pines, certainly, and where Tiger is right now.
Well, Torrey Pines is a great golf course. He's going back to familiar territory because he's won there many, many times, right? But more importantly, I just had a wonderful conversation with Tiger over a couple of days ago in South Florida. And I actually back him to have a big year.
Really?
I really do.
I was asked this question, one or two wins or above?
I think he's going to have a multiple win year. Okay. I really do. I think just by having a conversation with him, his head is in such a good place, right? Yes, he's a little older than most. But he's just in a good place. I don't want to go too deep in the conversation, but I just enjoyed my time with him. I enjoyed the conversation. We haven't had that many in the past, but for me to hear where he is, I walked away. Even my son said, "Dad, that was such a cool conversation listening on." So that means a lot.
Okay, inquiring minds want to know the great white shark. It's Torrey Pines. Is the shark picking Tiger? I mean, what's the take here for Tiger this week at Torrey?
Look, the week at Torrey, I would say he's definitely going to have a big chance at it. He's coming off what he did at the President's Cup. He's had a pretty good off season. His mind is fresh, and he's going to hallowed grounds, right, that he loves, right?
Yeah. U.S. Open
victory. And quite honestly, and like I said to him, it's the best I've seen him swing the golf club in a long, long, long time. And so he's not trying to overpower it.
And driving it so accurately.
Driving it. Uh-huh. That's what I mean. He's not trying to overpower it. He's long. He's still long. But his motion and his golf swing is so repetitive, consistently repetitive. And he can still putt the ball, right? So if he can drive it on the fairway and as good as he's, I would say I'd put him in the top two putters in the world today at his age. So putting those two combinations together, that's why I'm pretty confident he's going to have a big year.
Welcome back to the First Cut Podcast. My name is Kyle Porter. I'm here at the PGA Show, PGA Merchandise Show. Roger Bell, Danny Cannell. How are we doing, guys?
We're good. I'm a little light in the pockets. Like, you know, I came up thinking
empty-handed.
Empty-handed.
I'm with you.
I thought I was going to be stuffing pockets full of gear and merch, and we were going to go home, you know.
Are you not circling the Nike belt?
We tried.
That was great.
We tried. Yeah. We tried to get it from them. You know, it's funny because I told my daughters where I was going, and my oldest is a golfer. And I was like, I'm going to get so much stuff. I'm getting gifts. Last night I came home like one little towel. And they have to share it. Like, I only get one. So it wasn't exactly the handouts that I was expecting.
So I've never been here on Friday afternoon. I was telling Raja this yesterday. I think Friday afternoon is the...
When they open things up.
You just start making laps. Because nobody wants to ship stuff back.
Right.
They don't want to pay for it. So they're like, oh, yeah, Danny Cannell. Yeah, here's we'll nine see. Polos.
That's kind of what I strategized yesterday. We were walking around, and I said, Danny, look, what you need to do is come get FaceTime to everybody here, every day. And
Remember, then just be
a straggler on Friday when they start packing up, and guaranteed something's going to come your way.
Yeah.
I can't be here Friday. I'm out.
Okay, let's talk a little golf. We've got Tiger playing Torrey this week. We got a big season on deck. There's a lot of, I think, incredibly fun storylines. You know, can Zion make it into the Masters?
So that's a big
storyline. Right.
What can he do?
I don't know if that's going to happen, but when you guys think broadly about golf in 2020, let's take Tiger out of it for a second. What are the things that intrigue you in terms of the questions you're asking, the things you're thinking about this year?
Are we still going to sleep on Brooks Koepka, my Florida State guy,
who always
gets overlooked and has that chip on his shoulder, you know, coming off a knee surgery? Is he going to be impaired by that, or is his run of dominance can continue? Because if you look at what he's done, it's been one of the more impressive runs that we've seen in the history of golf, and yet he does bring up some pretty good points. Like, hey, and I think some of it has to do with his personality, right? It's prickly. He's a little bit more aggressive, and he's not afraid to hold back at all. So I'm curious to see how he does. And then probably the other storyline is Jordan Spieth, to see if he kind of can come back to the level of play where we were talking about him and his run to start his career.
Well, that was going to be mine. Like, Brooks Koepka has been great. I Rory McIlroy for me, I felt like when Tiger kind of fell off, everyone just crowned Rory, right? And he was that for a minute, and then Jordan came around, and then they kind of just disappeared. And I thought, like, correct me if I'm wrong, Rory had a good season last year, but didn't come back to where he was like a dominant force.
Well, especially at the majors,
right.
he didn't really. I mean, he misses the cut at the Open. He's not really in contention. He had a couple top tens at the majors, but they were like kind of
like backdoor.
Did you say backdoor-y?
Backdoor-y.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, you had a wide to anything. You got absolutely.
Did you trademark?
No. That's for general.
There you go.
Yes.
There it goes. You know what else I'm looking for? If Max Homa can up his Twitter game even more. Because my man has the best Twitter game.
He's pretty good.
On the PGA Tour. Oh, you got to do this. So I want to see you do it. I'm scared to do it.
Okay.
If you post a golf swing on there, he'll like shred you.
Really?
Like, and there's some dudes with some really good golf swings.
It's pretty good.
And he'll be like, you should be out at the Muni on Sundays, like in line for 6 hours. And he just unleashes
on people.
And people
are lining up for him to,
and
like,
line it up
eviscerate
for him
their golf swings.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Great.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Now, the Koepka thing is interesting because I think when we talk about Koepka, especially as just the general fan, people talk about Ricky as much as they talk about Koepka. Or they talk about I don't know, Phil, who's not really relevant in big events as much as they talk about Koepka. Why is that? What is the reasoning behind the way that people talk about these things and not, like, why are people not galvanized around Koepka?
Don't you think everything in our society is personality driven?
It's marketing.
It's absolutely it's marketing. Yeah. It's branding, but it's also likability. Mm-hmm. You know, for whatever reason, like Ricky Fowler's one of the nicest dudes on tour. Like, he's got a great smile. He interacts with the fans. Phil is high-fiving fans throughout his career, and he's kind of always had that interaction with Tiger where he was this underdog and Tiger was the hero and he was trying to take him down, so people gravitated toward that. You know, Ricky's a smaller guy, so I think that, you know, he just for whatever reason, people are attracted to that, see him maybe as an underdog. And Brooks, he's not afraid to really speak his mind. And I think in all sports, we don't like our star athletes to do that. We want them to think and act the way that we like them to. And I'm guilty of this. We've argued about this.
He's an unapologetic boss. Like, he yes. looks the part, yeah. like, physically. Do you know what I mean? He's got a stature about him, and he's good, and he wins, and he wears it on his sleeve. Like, you know what I mean? Like, well, to your point, I think people like the other guy better than that guy usually.
Right.
I think the funny part about that is, when's the last time you heard Ricky say something interesting?
Right.
It doesn't happen.
Right.
And everything Brooks says is interesting.
Right.
And maybe some of that is just contextualized because he's playing really well. So, like, whenever the best player in any sport says something, it's interesting, quote unquote. But I'm with you. It's weird that somebody like Ricky, who hasn't won a major, and we pick on Ricky. He's in the easiest target. There's 10 other people like that.
Right.
Who hasn't won a major, who doesn't really say much interesting, is more lovable than somebody like Brooks, who is interesting and is a winner.
Right. And it's similar to, you know, like we just saw Derek Jeter get in the Hall of Fame. Derek Jeter was somebody, and now he had championships, he had rings to back it up. But throughout his career, he never said anything to the media, and yet the media loved him. And they made it. I know. But, like, when we were there in Bethpage, when Koepka was talking about how he only has to beat 10 to 15 guys, and he eviscerated the entire field by saying, I don't have to do this.
Yes.
Half these guys can't play. The other half are going to fold on Sunday. Like, he eviscerated half of them. I would be really, really curious to know, because I do think there's got to be some resentment on tour to that mentality, and yet I think he uses that edge similar to the way that Tiger did early in his career, where Tiger wasn't talking to anybody, where he had that laser focus, whether when he went from the clubhouse to the range to the tee to the green, it was, I'm not even going to talk to you.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there's a little bit of that intimidation factor with Brooks, and to his credit, Tiger was really, you know, before that it was Jack, but we haven't seen many golfers be able to pull that off.
Yeah.
That into, and with success. Like, we've had guys, imitators, try and they get exposed, and yet what do you do with Bethpage? He goes out the first day, I think he shot 63.
Yeah.
I was always like, oh.
I think he went 63-65, and I think when you contrast that, so we're in this era of, like, everybody's boys, everybody hangs out, everybody plays together, and Brooks is like, that's not my deal.
Right.
And
do you think they like him, or do you think it bothers them, or do you think they just think that's Brooks? I wonder if there's a resentment, a genuine, like, hey, he's too cocky, you know? I don't know.
Yes, there is. What do you mean? Yes. Yes.
Saying they don't like him.
No, I'm saying that there is. I'm not saying you don't like the person. I'm saying there's an inner harbor of resentment by everyone else, man. Like,
He's backed it up. I think when you talk to golfers, I think they're like, as long as you back it up, you've won four majors, that's
you're real, allowed
that's
to
a
do
real
it.
Thing. Yeah.
You're allowed
and
to.
So I don't know the I don't think resentment is the right.
Right.
Like deep down, like maybe resentment is a strong word, but deep down as a pro, when you see a guy who just knows he's better than everyone, like he wears it on his sleeve, there is something in you that's like, maybe it's even more like a little bit of jealousy. Like, damn, that would be dope to be able to just come out and sit and just barely work at it and be that good. I think, and that's why you know, people can relate to Ricky and those guys more than they can relate to a guy who just says, I'm really good and deal with it. I don't have to work very hard
at
it.
But don't you think there would be more resentment for somebody like Ricky who gets all these endorsements? He's only won five times. I mean, look.
Well, you know who had resentment toward Ricky? Brooks Koepka.
Yeah.
Because Brooks was like, hey, man, I'm out here winning. I can't get a commercial.
From players.
And Ricky's on every commercial.
And not only.
But Ricky's a great kid, so everybody likes him. They understand, like, hey, good for him.
And not only Ricky, but I think even somebody like Spieth, where Brooks is like, wait a second. You guys talk about next great American. He's won three. I've won four.
Right.
And he's irrelevant right now.
You want to talk about deep resentment? This goes back to junior golf. When all these other guys that we're talking about, Fowler and Spieth, were christened early as these amateurs who were going to be surefire home runs, and Brooks Koepka has to go to Europe, you know, to earn his way and do it the hard way. So this has been boiling under the surface for Koepka for probably a decade.
I think about this as it relates to Spieth and Justin Thomas, too, because they were always, and this is the part that people miss. They were always the same growing up. Thomas was probably a little better at times. And then they get out there. Spieth wins the Masters. Spieth wins three majors. And JT's on the Korn Ferry Tour.
Right.
And you're like, wait a second. And to Thomas's credit, he stayed the course. He went through the process. And now he's probably the better player.
For sure. Yeah.
And,
I think
as a professional athlete, that's really difficult to do when your boy is getting all these accolades, all the money, all the commercials, and you're like, wait a second, I'm like better than this guy.
Right.
Yep.
But can we just say something though? They all have a great life, right? Like, how upset can you be when you're taking spring break trips over to Baker's Bay on your private jet and you're out there playing golf in shorts and no T-shirt? Like, how mad could you be at that guy that you're drinking tequila with at night? But, you know, but I hear what you're saying. I'm obsessed with it.
You talk about it, like any sport. Like we're talking about, like, Kobe, for instance. He was on Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson's pod, and he was talking about a kill list that he had when he was 13, right? No, it was. He was talking about Tim Thomas was the number one player in the class, and you know, this guy was the number five player in the class, and he was number 100. And so, you know, at any level, and we've talked about this a lot, you're finding reasons to stay motivated and stay fueled. And even if it is your boy, right, like, you know, and you think you're better than him, you know, there's value in someone else thinking he's better than you. Because that takes you back to a place of humility, a place where you're like, hey, listen, don't put the cart before the horse. Like, we've got work to do, you know. And I think when you're at any great level in any sport, you're looking for any little edge you can get just to stay focused, to stay laser sharp, to stay on your grind, you know?
As guys that used to play professionally, what part of a golfer's professional life are you most jealous of in terms of what they get to do, what, you know, that whole deal?
Easy. Private jet life, man. Now, they don't all have it, but anytime I see a Wheels Up or a NetJets or they've got that endorsement, I'm like, man, that and also the international travel. Like, I think that would be so cool. That would be tough, and it would be taxing. Like, I think playing in the NFL is the easiest on a family to have a sense of normalcy, like to kind of have a normal life. Like, you're usually working 9 to 5 through the week, and you only have to travel 8 weekends a year. The other time, you're around your family if you want it. So I think it'd be a grind, the travel schedule, but to be able to hop on your private jet and to go around the world – I think that would be – those two things are incredible.
That's dope. But let me ask, and this is out of pure ignorance, how many dudes on the PGA actually, like,
you gotta be in
get
that
to
upper
live
echelon.
That life, right? Like,
I
feel like the grinder in basketball, like the minimum player in basketball, has a much, like, better existence than the grinder in golf. Like, do you know what I mean? Because it's guaranteed.
Yes.
It's there.
Your salary is set.
Your salary is set.
How many guys in the NBA last year made over $1 million?
A lot. I mean, the minimum.
I was going to say, what is the minimum? Probably
the
close.
Minimum's probably close to $1 million now. And you got to forgive me. You're talking about 30 some teams. You're talking about 12 guys a team. Yeah. So
So 250 guys made $1 million. Is that
fair? Sounds about right. Yeah.
So PGA Tour was, I think there was 105 guys that made $1 million. So you're right in that there's more guys in the NBA that are, and to that point, like, you know, Pat Perez not flying private. I mean, actually,
he might be getting on with somebody, too. That's what I would be best friends with, Brooks or DJ or one of these young guys that would actually get it. That would be my thing, too. And, I mean, as golfers that Rajah and I both are getting to play these courses.
No, that,
and I wonder if they appreciate it, because I probably took it for granted when I was playing at Lambeau Field or Arrowhead. You don't really think about that, and I'm sure some fans are like, what, are you crazy? But when I see them going to Wingfoot this year, wherever they're playing, I'm like, man, that would be fun.
And the real thing is when they get invited to play, you know,
everywhere.
Friar's Head or,
right.
you know, all these different places, because they can play, they get invited anywhere. They get invited everywhere. But the irony is they don't want to, because that's like their
it's work.
That's work for them. Yeah. So, okay, let's talk about the Masters a little bit, because we got that coming up later. When you think about the Masters this year, I won't go picks yet, but who are you thinking about in terms of thinking that they're going to have a good year?
You don't want my Ted Potter Jr. take? You don't want that one? All right. I think for me, I think it's going to be first in line, first discussion, and of course, because he won last year, is Tiger. And I think it is going to be a fascinating discussion, because he obviously wants to overtake Jack in the 18. But if he only wins, and it's his best chance because he's so familiar with it, and it's early in the season, so health-wise, mentally, he's refreshed.
Yeah.
But if he starts creeping up close to there and it's only because he's amassing green jackets, does that take away from it? Probably not, but I do think it's an interesting subplot that kind of unfolds.
Like he's not playing well at the other majors, and it's
right.
just a guess.
Kind of like last year, later on, you know, but although he finished all right.
Well, that is interesting, because I've thought since like this later stage of his career that actually the Open Championship would be the best tournament for him, because he's so creative, and that's a tournament where a lot of times you don't have to, you can play it on the ground a little bit. You don't have to be crazy long. I mean, he's still long enough. But as he gets older, he won't be as long, and he can still have success at an Open Championship. But he didn't play well. I mean, obviously he missed a cut at the Open last year, and he wins the Masters. So I don't know. I don't know if I had to pick a tournament that he was going to be best at over the next 5 years. I still might go Open with a Masters in second.
Right.
I've always felt, and I feel like I've said this to you before. Tiger in this like version of himself, if it's a course where guys can get crazy low, I don't think he's there. Like, because he doesn't play like that. You know what I mean? He plays to protect against the big miss, right? It's a smart round. And I feel like maybe it's just me, the younger golfer, when they see an opportunity to beat up a course, like, they're, like, firing at it. And Tiger just doesn't – maybe it's, like, me saying, like, hot take, there's a flaw in his game. I think he stays with that game plan.
We saw him in the final round last year.
He stays with it.
Everybody goes for it.
Yeah.
On 12, 13, 14 – and he's just
right there.
He just hits the green. He makes a birdie. I think he birdied 13. He birdied 15. You know, those are kind of pars for that course.
Right.
Yeah. And then he goes on to
win.
That,
and so, like, if the courses where you can get it, I think the young guys, they have more firepower than him. Tougher courses where you've got to think your way around it and you've got to stay the course to, like, not making the big miss, I think that's where he is going to make most of his hay coming down.
Which is interesting, because it's sort of like I guess a Kobe or somebody at the very end of their career, kind of like a great quarterback who used to have this unbelievable arm, and now they're just kind of doing it mentally.
Right.
And like moving stuff around. Right. You know?
And sometimes that's way more valuable than the natural talent or the ability to bomb it or the ability to, like, that is more valuable. The fact, the experience factor, how to play.
And it's more interesting.
It absolutely is. I think he'll appreciate the storyline too. I want to see Tony Finau this year win a major. And he's been getting closer and closer and closer. We met him up at Bethpage.
He's
awesome. A big Rajah Bell fan.
He's great.
From Utah. He was a big Jazz fan. Yeah. So he actually recognized Rajah.
Dude,
I was like,
big
hey,
too.
He was starstruck.
He's huge.
He is. You don't realize that how big he is. But I'd love to see him, you know, challenge. And who's going to be the next breakout star?
Yeah.
Is there, you know, like a Xander Schauffele or somebody that's coming, a Max Homa, somebody that's coming up that's going to maybe have a year like Koepka did where they get multiple majors, which it's crazy to even say that out loud because it's so far-fetched. But is there somebody in the making that kind of comes up that's on the rise that becomes this next crop of Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, Brooks Koepka, that aspect?
You know what's interesting to me, because we've been sitting here and I don't get to talk off a lot. Like, we've talked for – no one said DJ, right? And
I know. He's the guy that I think when we talk about superstars, he gets the most – Koepka too sometimes, but the most overlooked, you're like, oh yeah, DJ's got 20 wins.
Yeah,
right. What's he ranked right now too? I mean, isn't he?
I think he's
fourth.
I was going to say, he's top five in the world, and I mean, he gets overlooked a lot.
It's just interesting. Like, but Brooks is his guy, right?
Yeah, and they're
Brooks,
boys.
You know, it's another one of those, like, kind of got my shine right now, brother. Like, am I coming to take it back, or am I going to let you have it? Like,
right.
He's an interesting one to meet, though.
Yeah.
He's great. I love him because he kind of just – he kind of does his own thing, and it comes off as like, oh, DJ's, like, you know, all over the place mentally, but it works for him. You know, so
he's by far the best athlete on tour, wouldn't you say? Like, just naturally.
I think Finau's up there.
Really?
Yeah.
But I can't get past the pictures of him when he was 12 and 13. No offense, but like, when I think of natural athlete, I don't see somebody who thinned out as much as he did. But I bet he's probably a pretty good basketball player. Yeah. But I think I've seen the videos of Dustin doing like 360s.
I think your boy Ted Potter's probably up
there. Yeah, I'm sure he's up there.
When you guys are talking about just random off the wall players, do you have a guy? Like, is there a guy where maybe it's Ted Potter? Maybe, I mean.
Well, you know why I picked him? It was totally because we were doing our show last year, and I think you were even like, who the heck is this dude? Because I was looking for
He's
a lefty.
Wizard.
I was looking for a lefty. Like, that's what I was thinking. Like, lefties have had more success. You had Bubba and Phil. I was like, why not take a flyer on a lefty where maybe they can shape it a little bit better their game? And then obviously it didn't work. But that was a total, like, crapshoot, just flying, like, just shoot a dart at the board, you know?
I love it.
I like Keegan Bradley.
Really?
You know what? You know why?
He wears the
Jordan. Yes, I was just going to say that. That's the whole reason.
Like his little routine, like his quirk.
Right.
He looks like he's swinging a baseball bat.
I know.
He does. He's got a little edge to him.
I know. Yeah, a little
bit. I love it.
Who of the stars or superstars? Like, if all the guys are like 10 under coming down the stretch at Augusta, who are you rooting for?
That's no question.
Take Tiger out.
Oh, take Tiger out. You know, at this point, and it's really, it's probably Phil.
Really?
Yeah, and I was like, I mean, when I was introduced to golf, you either liked Tiger or you liked Phil,
right?
Like,
so
I hated Phil because I liked Tiger. But at this point, I feel like over the last few years, he's more relatable to, like, I feel like I've seen another side of him, right? I pull for him now more than I would. Like, I feel like him and Tiger might not necessarily be in that same type of place they were in. So I've accepted Phil. I'm Team Phil now. So coming down the stretch, I go with the lefty, man.
Yeah, I was interesting because you said he's not, I don't know. I don't know what the word. I want to put words.
I think I said
relevant?
He's not relevant at major championships.
Yeah.
What about him going back to Wingfoot at 50, the place where he had it? He wants it so bad.
For sure.
You know?
But
that would be unbelievable.
You know,
he said last year at, I think it was at the Travelers, right after Pebble Beach, after the U.S. Open, he's like, I've just accepted the fact I'm never going to win a U.S. Open.
Right.
And you're like, that's tough to hear. You know, one of the kind of subplots this year, he's not even in the U.S. Open yet.
Right. He's got to qualify,
so
right?
He's got to qualify. You got to be, I think it's top 60, and he's in the 70s right now.
Oh, wow.
And he has no other, you know, I mean, he could win the Masters and get in or whatever,
right.
But he's not in it right now. And now, is he going to get a special exemption from the USGA because he's had the history, because of Wingfoot? Maybe.
Right.
But it would be kind of unprecedented for somebody who's never won a US Open to get that exemption.
You know who I do like watching play and root for down the stretch is Justin Thomas. I like watching JT. I like his competitive fire that he's got. And he does not like me.
Right.
It's been well done. Because he's a Bama fan.
Yeah,
I've given Bama a hard time in college football with some of the rankings, although I think it was always fair when I did so. He is not afraid to come at me on Twitter and call me out for a bad Bama take. So I've liked that about him. And I do think, like, I can appreciate that competitive spirit. Because I think there are too many guys who are too friendly in golf. And it's invaded all sports where there's that, hey, let's dap each other up and where are we going to dinner after? And I want to see guys, and I know he's still friendly with everybody, but I do think he gets that mindset, like, I want to tear your heart out when I'm on the course. And I can appreciate that and root for that.
Yeah, man, the back nine on a Sunday, it's different. You know, when you're in it, like when you're leading, when you're a couple back, and he loves it.
Yeah.
And not everybody does.
No.
You can get in it.
And
it's uncomfortable, and you can eject, and he does not do that.
Do you think that's Ricky's problem?
I knew you were going to ask that.
Because it's got to be, right?
I don't think he loves being uncomfortable, because it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm out in the lead. And even somebody like Xander, he hasn't really slept on a 54-hole lead and then just closed. Going back, he won Tournament of Champions last year. He shoots like a 62 in the final round. He comes from behind.
Right.
He comes from behind to win. He comes from behind to win. And you're like, man, I want to see you up three going to the back nine and shut it down like JT would do.
Right.
Yeah. And that doesn't mean JT's going to win every time. But I think with Ricky, I don't think he loves being uncomfortable.
Right. Raja and I have talked this a bunch, and I know you've heard me say this before. I was always a better performer when I was down, because there's no pressure on you when you're down. You're almost expected to lose.
It's
like my
the
best
hunter
game
versus
ever.
The hunted, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I've thrived in that role and got a little bit more tentative when we were up. Like, let's not lose this one. And then golf especially.
Yeah.
You cannot have that mindset. Yeah. You've got to have that closer mentality. So maybe it will be where Ricky's first is that he comes from behind.
That almost happened at the Patrick Reed Masters.
Right.
He shoots 64 on Sunday, birdies the last.
Yep.
And he almost got into a playoff. He finished one back.
When is there going to be a brawl on a green with Patrick Reed and somebody? Because I'm here for that, too. I'll sign me up
the
for
question,
that one.
Will it be a media member? Will it be a player?
Exactly. Exactly. You know what's coming, though. You know what's coming. Man.
Roger, do you have any good golfer, NBA player crossover comps? Like, if I give you, who's the Rory of the NBA?
Who's the Rory of the NBA? What would Rory, like, Rory characteristics? Like, give me... what would define Rory in your...
Maybe most talent in the world. His career's kind of had some ups and downs to it.
Blake Griffin, kind of.
Okay.
Yeah, Blake Griffin for a guy, like, coming into the league, you saw a body, you saw a talent oozing from the pores, just an athletic ability that Rory some kind, you know, for a smaller guy, displayed with, like, his driver and stuff like that. Like, Blake Griffin, you were like, you know, if he gets it together, this could be... And he was the walking highlight for a long time, and then maybe it's not the same because it was injury-driven, but never really took that step. Like, you know, never really lived up to the hype.
Yeah.
I'm glad you didn't go Kyrie. There was a second.
Kyrie's too existential.
That's what I was glad we didn't try to go there.
I thought you might go KD for Rory. Because he's won some titles. You know, Rory's got four majors. He's won some titles.
I think KD, though, is, like, if KD's healthy – he, in my opinion, is the best player on the planet.
Than LeBron? At this stage?
At this stage.
But don't you think Pete Rory could be the...
I think so.
Yeah. That's where I think a KD might be a good comp.
It could be. Yeah. It could be. Because, Rory, when Tiger had the thing, whatever the thing happened, and it wasn't Tiger anymore,
right.
I was like, this is Rory's. Like, he just looked like he was a force like Tiger was going to be. But then he fell off that pace, and that, you know, that's kind of what I was talking about early. Kevin Durant's an interesting one, and I don't mean to take it over basketball, because he's still hungry. Like, he is forever going to look at LeBron and say, you're disrespecting me because LeBron's there.
Yeah.
And he strikes me as a dude who's just uber hungry no matter what. But
man, I could talk KD for all day. I was at the when was that? 08, when he was at Texas. I was at the Oklahoma State Texas game, the triple overtime, when he had, you know, 40 or whatever.
Right.
Really?
It was awesome. When
people were like, uh-oh.
I remember later that year, he had like 29 at Allen Fieldhouse in the first half. Yeah. And you're like, what is this?
What's
going on?
Right.
Okay, let's get some Masters picks. I picked... They make me pick on, like, January 2nd for the Masters and then stick with it. I'm like...
Oh, you can't back off? You always have to reserve the right to change.
What are we doing
Trust
here?
Trust me, I've already flip-flopped Super Bowl picks, like, five times going back and forth. You've got to be able to come off.
So January 23rd, as of today, who are you picking? Do you have a dark horse? Where are you guys at?
You're going Tiger.
You know where my heart went. I'm not. I'm going to take your boy. I'm going to take Brooks.
I like that.
Yeah, I'm going to take Brooks. Just
he's going to come in under the radar, which
again,
which is incredible. Insane.
Right. Yeah. Again.
Yeah. I don't really have a dark horse. I just, you know, it's one of the. It's like the Patriots for me now. Like, am I going to bet against him when I know what he does when those lights are on? And it's hard for me to do that. Yeah. You know.
I like doing it. I was telling you this before. Like a pool of players. Like take five guys to win. Now, I won't do that. I won't bore you with that. I would love to see, like, and watching Finau last year, I sat right on the 18th tee box, and it was kind of interesting because I think it was like two groups in front of Tiger. This was on Saturday. And I went and just sat right there in somebody's chair, you know, how it's like reserved, you just wait until they, but I got to watch him tee off, and, he's so physically gifted. I don't think you realize how gifted he is. I'm going to go with him or the guy you were talking about earlier, Xander Schauffele. I would take those two That would be my strong. But I'll go with Finau first.
Xander,
Finau's been knocking on the door. I think he's getting closer.
Xander made a leap last year statistically. He's always had good finishes. I think we were introduced to him at the U.S. Open. I think it was at Erin Hills in 17. But statistically, last year, he became a top 10 guy.
Yeah.
And he again, the next step for him, for me, is sleep on a 54-hole lead at the Players, at some big, big event, and then shut it down.
Yeah.
You know, close it out.
I want to see Finau just so we can see that video of him breaking his ankle.
Oh, my God. Part
three at the
that was brutal.
I want to see that video 100 more times. That was so – and it's unbelievable that he just popped up and threw it back in and kept going.
Yeah.
And still played that weekend.
I was at that par three. I didn't see it happen, but I saw him on the last hole. And the guy I was with, we were like, why is his pant leg rolled up to his knee? Like, what is he like? Is this a fashion statement? And
right.
And then we saw the video when we got in.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh my
either he's got no ligaments
God.
In there his ankle, or he's
dudes,
the toughest guy I've ever
there
seen.
There are a lot of dudes who wouldn't have played that weekend.
What?
A lot.
You think
dudes.
You could have played football if you
no? That's
your
what
ankle.
I'm saying. Like, it's pretty impressive. That's what I'm saying. I love it about him.
That's ridiculous.
And the best part about it is, he said he was. It was almost one of those embarrassment things, and that's what allowed him. He was so embarrassed. He's like, I just got to fix this,
yeah,
and then get
incredible.
Back out to it. You know.
And I think he shot a 68 on
right.
in the first round.
That's
his,
nuts. For,
his first ever Masters. I took Rory. I feel zero confidence about him. You know, I think for me, I think. It's more of a I would love to see him win because he cares about the things that are important to care about. He cares about the history of it. To win the slam at Augusta yeah. is the biggest deal. And
yeah.
he's so good there. I mean, his numbers there, I know he had the collapse in 11, but his top 10s over the last 8 years, it's a joke. I mean, he's so good that he'll have one nine-hole stretch where he'll shoot 40, he'll shoot 39 and just kind of take himself out of it. So
right.
I wouldn't mind pulling for Rory.
Yeah.
I'd pull for Rory.
Do you think Tiger, because we were talking about this yesterday, so I do think the new schedule took its toll on everybody, right? Sandwich them all closer,
it's
tighter.
It's different, for
it's
sure.
It's definitely different. Do you think he does anything differently scheduling-wise? I mean, clearly he's not going to go to Thailand for 2 weeks again. I don't think so anyway.
Yeah.
But do you think he does anything? Because I do think that's one of his best assets and attributes is he knows his body. He knows it. Because it was new, it was sort of an experiment. But now I wonder what tweaks he'll make so that he's more ready for the majors when they come up.
I would like for him to.
Right.
I mean, why, do you need to play five times before the Masters?
It's like Koepka's. When Koepka came out and said, the only time you see me practice is when I'm on TV at a race. But I almost felt like, you know what, Tiger should take a page from that.
Yeah.
And just use the regular tour events as prep for the majors. I mean,
yeah.
that's what he's had on his picture on the wall and everything. You know, I don't know. It'll
yeah.
be interesting to see if he
now,
does it.
Yeah, because he didn't play. There was a tournament last year. I think it was Arnold Palmer where he had, like, a neck thing, and he didn't play it. And you're like, that's kind of a good thing.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I don't know if anything – I don't know if his schedule will change. He's kind of got – the problem is he's got his set – I mean, he plays Memorial. That he's won there a ton. He plays Riviera because he's the host of the event. So
right.
you start looking at it and you're like, well, what's he not going to play?
Yeah,
you know, it's already pretty pretty set when it comes to him. But, yeah, should be a fun season. Thank you guys for coming on.
You got it. It was fun.
Yeah, it's great.
We'll go look for some swag.
It's a great week. Good luck with the belts, Roger.
Yes, man, I need at least a
We'll try to figure that out. And, yeah, we'll talk to you guys again
soon. I'm taking these Callaways with me right here.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.